Hey. I realized just this moment I forgot to put on the cordless mic, so I'll figure it out. How are we doing? Oh, that was sad. How are we?
Good,
Jim. Glad to hear it. Okay, last week we started talking about the humanity of Jesus. I believe, we all believe, that Jesus is 100% divine and 100% human. In the evangelical church, we often focus a lot on the divinity of Jesus and not so much on the humanity. I believe that he was 100% human, 100% divine, and nothing I say, I don't want to try to do anything subversive or non-traditional in that sense. Everything I'm doing is within that framework. But I think that... Yes, and the tomatoes, John, yes. I'm hoping that we get a sense this morning a little bit of who he was as a person. Because I think knowing him as a person, I can say this for myself, has gone a long ways towards me having a full, more complete relationship with God. It makes him personal, it makes him human, it makes him accessible. And that's something I need for me, who is a person who loves to live in his head. And I want to learn to love the Lord with my heart, my whole body, more holistic experience. So, last time what we did was, we started out with some pretty controversial pictures, some slides of traditional and non-traditional views of people that have had of who Jesus is. And what I want you to do, not say it, but just think in your own head, what is the image that you've had in your head of who Jesus was as a human being? Those of us that were raised in the church probably have very strong images from Sunday school when we were about 10 of Jesus holding a lamb and Jesus with the little children. And all of those images were true, yet incredibly incomplete. And I'm hoping this morning we get a little bit bigger picture of who he was. Okay. Last time, you may.
Most of the, I wasn't here last week, but I listened to it, and most of the pictures of Jesus are usually very solemn, even videos and films.
Yes. I've heard about it, and I have not seen it. Yes. Good. Last week, our time got so short, I was hoping last week to call Mark Perez up to sort of summarize what we had learned last week. So I'm going to call him up now to summarize what we learned last week, and then I'm going to pick it up from there. So, Mark,
okay, I'll summarize.
It's all yours.
Last week what we did was, after Ross presented a question posed pursuant to an image on the screen or a passage on the screen, he solicited ideas and thoughts from the people in the audience. And what I did when I was in the back of the room was I was writing down some of the ideas you had. I didn't write them all down because I would have had to have been a stenographer, and that wouldn't work. But what I did do was I put a few of them down that I think would be salient to the discussions that will happen today and maybe in some in the future. So I'm going to go through them very briefly here before Ross comes back up and reinitiates the dialogue that he had last week. Now, first of all, there were some descriptors of the... This? I think it's on. Yeah. The descriptors of the traditional pictures, and the pictures weren't obviously photographs. There were images of unless there were some really good Sony cameras when Jesus was around, but I don't think so. There were images, and some of the descriptors of the traditional pictures included words that you used, such as meek, mild, serene, strong, reverent, holy. And then some folks said feminized. That was an interesting observation. And Rastafarian, because one of the images had the hair formed up as a Rastafarian. Some of the descriptors of the modern pictures included Jesus affirming us. And that's modern being something after, say, 1980 or later. We're okay. Like, everything's groovy. It's okay. We're cool. Jesus is political, because there were at least a couple of those images, or one of them that I remember specifically, that was very political. It suggests sinfulness. In other words, some of the images themselves suggested that Jesus in some way was involved in sin. Jesus was mocked. Some of them were mocking Jesus. And all of the images had someone's point of view. Now, both the traditional as well as the modern ones did, but the modern ones tended to exhibit it much more openly, as if they were designed to be political and designed to attract controversy. Now, one of the questions was, Jesus is, with a question mark after it, and some of the answers that you gave was concerned with human relationships, that he was concerned to start with, and that human relationships were the primary concern, and he was practical. In one case, he was marveling at a non-Jew. He was compassionate, but, quote, had an edge, which is an interesting thought. He was beset by human limitations like fatigue and homelessness, and some people felt that there is something of the divine even in the acts of those who mistreat us that stems from what was being said in one of the gospel accounts that Ross presented on the screen. Jesus gives us a perspective on the transitory to not worry. And what we're talking about there is when one of the verses came up and said, don't worry about what you're going to wear and all that kind of stuff. Jesus was trying to give us a perspective that apparently at the time the folks were not having. He admonishes us. He admonishes us to avoid pretentiousness. And Jesus did not have an edge, which is a contravention of what somebody said earlier. Did not have an edge, but what he said had an edge. And you can't con Jesus. How did others react to him? Well, in one respect, people were astonished. And there will be a lot more reactions like that in the future here. But what does this say about Jesus? Well, there was a pretty long list that you folks came up with. One of them was that Jesus' priorities differed from those of his time. So I think what Ross was really getting at was that he was kind of an iconoclast in some respects, destroying what the icons of the time were and the cultural icons. He declared God's unattainable standard, and Jesus goes to the heart. Goes right to the motive. Motive is primary. Those were three different ways of saying the same thing by at least three different people. And he called it like it is. In other words, there was no pretense to him. He was disarming. In at least some respects, when somebody said something to him, immediately responded and then disarmed them. Not physically. Jesus engaged. In other words, he got into things to prevent conflict. And he demands humility. And Jesus expects us to honor our neighbor whether we like them or we don't like them. Which was an interesting problem for the people at the time because they didn't believe that was true. He encourages full dependence on God rather than what? What were the people at the time he was talking to dependent on? The religion or the law or something else. He commanded us not to worry, which is kind of an interesting thing. Don't worry. Don't worry. Or as one of the little images, the modern images had him, kind of like he was chilling out, just relaxing. He got angry, which is something that doesn't show up in a lot of the images. Matter of fact, that word wasn't even used in any of the images that we saw. Jesus balanced both mercy and judgment, and he experienced loneliness. What's interesting is that not too many of these terms that we came up with, that we derived from the Bible verses, showed up in any of the images. So there's a distinction. The images, whether they were modern or the traditional ones, did not have a lot of the language that came from the scriptures, which is kind of an interesting thought. If nothing else, dwell on that for a little while next time you see one of those kinds of photos. Al? It is kind of weird in that if you are concerned about the politics and the political oppression of the people, you would think that Jesus would have spoken more to that, because that was something that was very important to the people. But he did mention it obliquely. In at least one situation where he said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to God what belongs to God, he was trying to make a point that at once we have to honor and deal with our government. He understood the government at the time. But he also said, you have to honor and deal with your God. He was also not, especially in the Gospels, trying to show the relationship of humans and their socio-political situation. He had a very little time, and he had to emphasize his relationship as God to the people, and the people to their God. So the content of the Gospels and the content of the rest of the New Testament is going to spend a lot more time talking about that. And I got to let Ross up here, because I could stay up here all day long. But my point is, the phrases that we saw are phrases that came from you. And as we go through what Ross is going to do now, continue to come up with those short, pithy ideas about what was Jesus like given that particular phrase or that particular image or that particular circumstance. You're up, sir.
Thank you so much, Mark. I'm wireless now, Dave. You got volume on there? There we go. Okay, here's what we're going to do. What Al just said, I hope, is the longest thing anyone says. I really want to ask you to try to keep your responses one or two words, maybe a sentence. If you say something long, I'm going to ask you to try to come up with a way to shorten it. I want to get through a lot of this. What?
Yeah, I wasn't here at the other event last week. But
it's already too long. Yes, you can.
Was this limited to the first coming of Jesus or the second coming?
The first coming of Jesus. When Jesus... That's right. When Jesus... Walk here on earth. Thank you, Mark. Yes, that's right. With the slides, I'm getting higher tech. I'm actually going to give Rich the slides and get that on there. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through some more verses. I want you guys to give me your responses, and I'm going to talk after you talk this time. I want to know, what does this say about Jesus as a person? Okay? Try to not think about all the churchy stuff that you've learned in your life. Like you're reading this for the very first time. What does this say about the human being that was Jesus Christ, God incarnate, walking on earth? Okay? How would you feel if somebody spoke to you or addressed you the way he addresses some of the people that he's talking to? What's fresh and new to you? What's shocking to you? Please give me short responses. Do you want the lights? No, I'm good. How did others react to him? Human reactions. That's human feelings. That's kind of what I'm looking for. Okay? Let's go. Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel to the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. This one's fairly obvious. What was Jesus feeling? Compassion. Matthew 14, and when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them, and he healed their sick. Very similar passage. He was constantly feeling the other person's pain. Okay? Now it gets a little... What's that? That's right. He's active. In some cases, he went searching people out. And we'll see some of those. Then Jesus went into the temple of God and drove out all those who bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, "It is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you all have made it a den of thieves." What was he feeling here? Anger. Jealousy for God's house. Anger. Keep it. But they were making a profit. They were making.
That was the business, and he knew that.
Good. Say that. Find a shorter way to say that. Good. You're right. They were making a. Why was he angry? They were making a business out of the church. No?
That wasn't why. That was normal there. It was because they were overcharging when they did the exchange. They weren't giving a fair return.
Okay, so they were over-profiting.
Yeah. There's a mockery of God in God's house.
Yes, a mockery of God.
Protective.
It's protective.
Of God.
Protective of God. There's one other thing I want to say generally. Last week, there were several people in class who don't normally raise their hands, who I could see were like ready to say something. I want to encourage the people who don't normally raise their hands to please have a response to this stuff. It would be great. Thank you. Okay. And behold, this is a very interesting passage. I'm going to read it. You guys tell me what you think. Matthew 15, and behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, first of all, a woman of Canaan, is she Jewish?
No.
Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David, my daughter is severely demon-possessed. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. She said, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Well, what do we have here? This is a very interesting exchange. What's Jesus' first response? He ignores her. He doesn't even look at her. What's his second response? Can somebody sum up what she just said?
Well, I would think this was to bring out the best in her as a demonstration to the disciples. She already knew what the whole shtick was and that she had the faith. He was bringing it out, having her demonstrate it through her testimony, and also the apostles got to hear it, and now we're hearing it because they wrote it down.
Okay.
He responded to someone confessing that they recognized who he was.
Yes, but look at how he did it. What the first thing he did was ignore her. The second thing, he rebuffs her. He says, I'm only sent to the people from the house of Israel. The third thing he does is he insults her. Then, what does he do? He heals her daughter. It's a very interesting process. What does this say about him? What does this say about Jesus?
How strong is your faith?
Well, okay, how strong is your faith? What else?
What is demon possession?
Anybody want to try to explain demon possession in a sentence or two? Yeah. Dave?
If somebody opens the spiritual doors of their life, you know, to demonic things, then obviously a demon can come in and possess that person where that person's will decrease and Satan's will is increased in that person's life, so that person has less and less ability to make their own choices and decisions.
Why do you think... Good. Thank you. Why do you think he...
God has accommodated. Oftentimes in the Old Testament, he would want to do something and then someone of faith would question him.
Mm-hmm. Mark, do you have a response to this? What do you think?
That one's harder because there's so much complexity to it. I would say Jesus is being, in some respect, wily.
Wily.
Yes.
Very good. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And the matter is, it was like program coming from God. Jesus came for the house of Israel. It's 100% and God will deal with Israel forever. We know it's in New Testament and Old Testament. In this case, he wanted to put the right way these people who had agreement. But here, he showed that woman is very nice way. She was asking help from God. But now the people, a lot of people, using this passage to be arrogant and going jumping overhead. That's very wrong. This passage has to be, accepted by very right. Fragile way, because it doesn't teach arrogance for anyone. It
has to be taken in context.
I think it's an example of tough love as a parent.
Tough love as a parent.
I'm not going to give you everything you ask until you ask the right way.
Do you think he knew something about her heart? That this was the most effective way to get to this woman. Scott?
I don't think this had anything to do with the woman. I think this had to do with the people around it. She had already shown great faith just by traveling there from Canaan.
That's right.
And they never say that her daughter was with him.
That's a very good point. She came all the way from Canaan, left her sick daughter to go find this guy who's supposed to be a healer.
Her faith had already been proven.
That's right.
He knew both her heart and the heart of the people around him. That he had an advantage to use the best tactics possible to make that thing happen.
Good.
It shows his divine wisdom, actually, in the way he taught, how he did all this together.
John Traeger.
Demonstrates the faith that works for both Jew and Gentile.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I've always thought this is something like a parallel to the story about the woman and the unrighteous judge, where she won't go away from him. And depending on how you put the inflection in that last sentence, is he exasperated at that point? He says, the only way I'm going to get rid of you, I'm trying here to teach my disciples, I'm on vacation, I'm not even in Israel at this point, I'm here to relax, and you bug me so much, I'm going to have to heal your daughter just to get you out.
Yeah, I doubt if that was the case, but it's an interesting response.
I think that he's also showing those that just follow the law, just follow the rules. He's showing them something here.
What do you think he's showing them?
You
don't follow just the law. Yes, sir.
It's he's addressing their racial pride and their privileged position, using them as the children's bread and drawing that contrast with the little dogs. But really what he's saying is that you don't gain this stuff by anything other than faith, not out of privilege, not as a son of Abraham or anything else. You get it by your pedigree.
Or by following the rules.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to take about one or two more on this one, then we're going to go to the next. Thank you.
I agree with our brother that we thought that there is nothing about woman. It's about people around. It's just one example, like Adam and Eve, there were another people. And in this case also, the Jesus told one time when he feed the people with fish, he always tell, underline says, you are coming to me because you need food. But here is also, she needs just healing. She didn't believe in God, something. They just crowd follows Jesus, you know, to get healing from something. They don't care about God in that case. That's a very important thing. He doesn't underline that case just to accept God, but to get some benefits in the prophet. That's a lot of people doing now. They don't care about God, but the case to get some benefits from God, healing or...
Very good. Al, you're...
Yeah.
Like that. He seems to go against his own thing. He answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That meant the Jews. And so that's kind of a great thing there.
Okay, next one. I think for all the ones that talk about the humanity of Jesus, this next one is my favorite. Now, Matthew 21, in the morning as he returned to the city, he was hungry. And seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves. And he said to it, let no fruit grow on you ever again. And immediately the fig tree withered away. This is really interesting. What would we say about if Ted here had the power to kill a fig tree because he couldn't find a fruit on it, and Ted looked at that tree and killed the tree, what would we say about Ted?
I would treat him.
But what would you say to Gloria when you got home?
Watch out for Ted. Yeah, watch out.
What does this say? Yes.
It's about judgment. Same thing that there is some example about gardener that he takes care of tree, doesn't bring any fruit, and they cut in the end. Same thing. It's about judgment. Nation or individuals, if they don't bring the fruit that God wants, that He treats people for that, fruit He wants, it's about judgment. He says that Jesus, in the end, He will cut the
grass. Mark.
That same thing.
He's being physically symbolic. Yeah. He's talking about judgment. He's talking about judgment. He's doing it through a physical act that's symbolic. So that's the real list on the people.
Okay. Ted?
The fig tree has always been a sign of Israel. Mm-hmm. The trees, the leaves, mean that you have a good show, but there's no fruit. So many levels. Plus, he was hungry. You know, it's multi-level.
How do you think? What did he feel? What was he feeling when he saw that tree and there was nothing on it?
He got mad.
He got angry.
Mm-hmm. See, the
Alan.
So he was hungry. Because the fig tree didn't have any figs on it, he's out of his anger. It's a living thing. It's not human, but it's a living thing, and he destroyed a living. Am I to understand? Is this a parable or is this a
no.
true story?
No, it's a true story.
So he killed a living thing because he was hungry and was angry. I know this sounds like I might be mocking a little bit, but. What about those 5,000 people that he fed? Couldn't he have done that for himself?
What do you guys think of that?
But I don't think it's about whether or not he needs food. I think it's both a symbol of the Jewish people, because he really was sent to talk to us through the Jews, just like God promised to Abraham. but it's also the rest of us. It's about judgment. But and it says in other passages, if you have faith, then there will be fruit there.
Okay.
So if you're saying I'm the tree, that's crazy, but I'm not making any fruit, that's not necessary. There's judgment, because obviously you have something false. If you're saying, hey, I'm one of the gangs, then you're not producing fruit. So
Sir, we're deviating from your instructions. You told us to read this as if, you know, without any churchy interpretation.
That's right. It's tough to do, isn't it? Thank you. The word that's in my mind is, if Ted had done this, excuse me, Ted, I would have used the word petulant.
Are we saying that he didn't know this was coming up, this tree?
Well, you know,
he knew all the time that he was going to approach this big tree without him.
That's right. Now, I think to understand this, you have to, there is a theology that comes into it. The divine half of God has to be understood, and what is he trying to say here? But what is his human reaction when he walked up to the tree and there was no fruit on it and he was hungry? That's right. And I'm just trying to focus on, he was human.
Going to the petulant, truly bizarre. Depending on the history, they often crucified people, not on poles, but they hung them from fig trees. They would line the roads, crucify people, just hung from a crossbar, hung from a fig tree. And I'm just wondering if maybe this isn't some reference to that.
It could be. Yeah, I want
to... I think it's also important to read it in context, because if you go like two verses down, it tells you exactly why he did it.
Tell us.
There's the answer. It says, truly I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you shall not only do what was done to this fig tree, but even say to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, and it shall happen. So that's why he did it. You know, we don't have to speculate about it, we just have to read it.
Good.
There is another thing. Always people, Christian people, like to point that Jews didn't do that, Jews did that. I would like to tell that it's not teaching not about Israel. Every nation will faith to God by herself, what each nation did. They will not pay what Israel did. They will be on judgment. It's the same picture in Adam and Eve. And when Adam says that, wife you gave me, he did thing, God says, you know, it's her part. He will pay for your part. Same thing. If Israel did something or does not, it's nobody's headache. You know, every nation will be in personal, will say what he does now. He's responsible, every one and each nation, for their action. That's why that's kind of doesn't seem nice, everybody points to Israel. Even though now that we accepted Jesus, we accepted still not right way. We are still doing our, like Christians, another mistake and everything. It's like when a Republican Party was and the Democratic was always criticizing, and the Democrats came and they're doing worse than it was, for example. Israel, they have to just to see the right God and the follow right God. I mean, you will pay for what are you doing for your life here. That's why, I mean, there is nothing about this. We have to be very open brain to get God's point. That's a very important thing.
Okay.
Also, Jan, see it to everything. You know what I mean?
He should have restored the tree. Then it would have been a great
I want... Okay. I want to respond to what Rich said. He took a very human response, a response that any of us can relate to, and made a theological point out of it. But he could have made that theological point out of what seemed to be a more noble human response if he had wanted to, but he didn't. He chose this response. And I'm not going to try to explain it. I just want you to see there's a million ways in the Gospels where he taught about faith, and if you have the faith the size of a grain of mustard, you can move mountains. That's a recurring theme. So he could have done it other ways, but he chose this example. Okay, let's do another one. Matthew 21 again. Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority?" But Jesus answered and said to them, "I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, where was it from? From heaven or from men?" And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the multitude, for all count John as a prophet. So they had this brilliant answer. They answered Jesus and said, we do not know. And he said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. How would you characterize, in one word, how would you characterize that last sentence? One word, Al. One word. How would you characterize that last sentence?
They're long-winded.
How about true? How about dismissive? Alan?
Hyphenated word, wise guy.
Wise guy. I'll take that. Wise guy. Discerning. How did he... One word. Okay, so what's the what's the sequence here? He asks a question. They ask him a question. How did he respond? With a question. Is that? Would you characterize this response as in any way nice or comforting?
No.
He was a debater. Was mocking? Did you say mocking? Yeah, I think so.
Instructive.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble with this. I see this as, you know, it starts off with a confrontation. So they're getting, you know, he's sitting there teaching people. They barge in, a bunch of them apparently, get in his face, and they're trying to shut him down right on the spot. And they may be standing between him and the people. And he's having this dialogue. And they're, you know, here the most authoritative people around are saying, who gave you this authority? Meaning, we're going to take you out of here if you don't shut up.
Right.
And he turns all the tables on them and says, who gave you the authority?
Right.
You know, what about John? Now they're caught in a vice. Jesus in front of them, the crowd behind them.
Good.
And I think he's just being arrogant with them.
Get out of my way.
Yeah.
Arrogant? Okay. I don't think so, but yeah. Mark?
Yeah, from the chief priest viewpoint, he would be impudent.
Yes, impudent. Okay. Is Jesus a smart guy? Why is he smart? I mean, what characterizes his intelligence? What's the evidence that you have that he was a smart guy? He was wise. He always went right to the point, didn't he?
He was a very good debater.
Yes. Excellent.
I think he addresses a lot of these that way. I mean, he's addressing the onset on his object, but
makes me wonder imagine Jesus living today. What would Jesus, if he went to a party, would he have engaged in a lot of small talk? Maybe. This is interesting. I'm getting yes and no. In one sentence. Right. So he knew.
He always responded to the condition of the heart.
Very good.
And if they had a hard heart, he came right back with hardness. Because to respond with softness and instruction to hardness.
So Jesus was looking for openness. And he even responded that way to whole areas, remember? He said, I can't teach here. I'm going to go teach over here because their heart is hard. They're not going to hear me. Scott?
Is every word that Jesus ever said in the Bible?
No.
We have no idea what happened between this and this. This may have been days. May have been hours. And for whatever reason, that wasn't recorded.
Yeah, which gospel is it that closes with, there's so many things that were done in John that he says that if he could not write enough to all the things that Jesus did that aren't written down. John?
Want them to disrupt the meeting.
Yes.
So he's very cleverly.
So he's working on three or four levels here.
Well, I was going to say, yes, he would have engaged in small, we were pretty small thought, but it would have been, but there always would have been a message in that. If you were listening carefully, you heard the story.
Right. Lee.
His answers did not give a handle for his opponents to grab hold of.
He would have made a great politician then. Scott?
He was teaching.
Yes.
He was teaching in the temple.
Right. So his response is correct. He's already teaching, and these guys come in the side door and get right in front of him and say, by what authority are you doing this? And he just shut them down. Al?
Yeah. He knew that the chief priests got their authority from Yahweh. The Holy of Holies was right behind them. So he should have said, I take my authority from the one who gives you authority, which is the Holy of Holies.
Okay, I'm going to go on to the next one. Listen to this language. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Look at the top of each verse. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind. How do you characterize this? Look at the names he's calling these people.
He's a name caller.
He is, isn't he? Yes.
Confrontive.
Oh, excellent. Confrontive.
He hated the scribes and Pharisees.
Well, I think he hated what they were doing. Yes. Okay. He did not like their heart. How many of us are willing to be this bold? Mara? I know you are.
I have to put up with her every Tuesday.
All right, let's keep going. As like last time, I'm... All right, serpents, brood of vipers. One of the books I read to prepare for this said that if you translate this properly, whenever he says brood of vipers, he's calling them illegitimate sons of snakes. In the vernacular, what would it be? Bastard sons of snakes. How's that for an introduction? Truthful again. And when Jesus was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him having an alabaster flask of very costly fragrant oil, and she poured it on his head as he sat at the table. But when his disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this fragrant oil might have been sold for much and given to the poor." But when Jesus was aware of it, he said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a good work for me. For you have the poor with you always, but me you do not have always. For in pouring this fragrant oil on my body, she did it for my burial. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." Well, that last verse is prophetic, isn't it? We're talking about it 2,000 years later. Okay, this is very interesting. What does this say about how Jesus saw himself and his place in where he was? So who was he?
He was a sample that people had to follow.
So what does this teach us about how?
We have to follow him. That when God,
what does this example teach us about how to follow Jesus?
We have to, for example, when he right now also he knocks door.
What this? This example.
Okay. Because when it's closed,
Ted.
It suggests that
may not be in God's economy.
Did Jesus care that in human terms, this was a waste of I mean, this was an extremely valuable, just in dollars, what she had. What did the woman feel about, what was she feeling about him? Honor, worship, love, devotion, loyalty. Okay. Good. Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." Jesus said to him, "Assuredly, I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." How would you characterize this response of Jesus? Was Peter sincere in what he said? What is Jesus' response in light of Peter's sincerity?
He's trying to help Peter to understand the truth. What was occurring? That Peter is human? I'm God. This is the shtick. You're going to crack up. It ain't going to be like you think.
Was this the compassionate side of Jesus?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, but it's characterized a different way, isn't it? Ted?
It says that Jesus knows Peter much better than Peter knows Jesus.
Very good. Once again, he's getting to the heart. Yeah, that's an excellent response. Ellen?
It's also pointing out the power of destiny. This is your destiny. It's beyond what you think.
Yeah. That's excellent.
I think it's also meant for people all after time to know from Peter's example that God knows when you're going to trip, that you're going to trip, and he's still going to love you.
Very good. He went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but I as you will. Let's just focus on that for verse. He went a little further and fell on his face. What's he feeling? I mean, he's on the road to being crucified. It's going to be the next day.
Despair.
Terror,
loneliness.
Loneliness,
reverence.
Okay. Very good. Excellent. Ted.
Well, you have to realize you have a being that is clean and pure, which I am not. To have filth thrown on me from, say it was it's filth from one person in this room. Now put everybody in this room on me, all the things they did. Now take the whole human race, put all that on. How would you feel as a human? It would be, I don't know what I would do. I'd go and sit. It wouldn't be just take this away.
I want to get to two or three more before. Well, I'll take one. John?
He's overwhelmed. That only makes sense.
Overwhelmed. Good. Now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last, two false witnesses came forward and said, "This fellow says, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days.'" And the high priest arose and said to him, "Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you?" But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, It is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Now here's Jesus claiming to be Christ, claiming to be divine. And yet he answers nothing when he is accused. Just put that in context with the verse before where he was in complete anguish as far as what was happening. What does this say to him when he answered nothing? What do you think he was feeling at those moments when he answered nothing? Mara? Scott?
Isn't that it is as you said, really, the I am of the Old Testament? Isn't in that it is as you said? I'm trying to remember the word there, but isn't it at that moment he's saying, I am God?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. He's saying yes to what?
In that it is as you said. No, it's I am.
No, he's not saying that.
Well, he's not saying those words at that point, but he's agreeing. Yeah.
He said the Son of Man.
Yeah, it is. It's a complete different discussion, but quickly. It wouldn't have changed anything. Leah?
I think he's telling him, you don't have the authority to ask me these questions.
That's good. Okay, let's do one more, and then I want to get to some of my conclusions. I've got twice as many of these as... Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said to him, It is as you say. And while he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Same thing. Let's go to the next one, because this is the same idea. At about the ninth hour, this is when he is dying on the cross, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now, we've all heard 100 explanations of this from a theological standpoint, but what was the person of Jesus feeling when this was happening?
Betrayal?
Betrayal? Abandonment? What?
Despair?
Abandoned? Abandoned? The weight of sin, excellent.
He's a very short-time human being, that's it. In that case, he was just for a short time, the flesh comes and he comes like a human being. But if there is nothing about faith, about them, it's just a very short time that's spoiled. That's the meaning, that's it. It's, you know.
Did you, what, somebody else? Okay. I don't know that it was. I think he was a human being his entire 33 years on earth, and his reactions were as human as divine. I want to read something. I've got so. Do you want to say something, Joe?
Doesn't that reference a psalm? I forget what psalm it is.
Yeah.
What is it? Psalm 22.
Yeah,
it's
about
probably
all
Psalm 22 would help.
Okay. He was the Messiah.
What am I doing here? I, but he's not, you know, like
I want to read something from one of the books. I read about six books to prepare for this. The two that made the most difference to me on a personal basis, this is one of them. I'll introduce the other one in a minute. Phil Yancey's The Jesus I Never Knew. This is just an outstanding book if you want to know who Jesus is, was, can be in your life. Let me read Phil Yancey, The Jesus I Never Knew. Listen to what he says and see how that fits with what we're talking about here. The personality that emerges from the Gospels differs radically from the image of Jesus I grew up with, an image I now recognize in some of the older Hollywood films about Jesus. In those films, Jesus recites his lines evenly and without emotion. He strides through life as the one calm character among a cast of flustered extras. Nothing rattles him. He dispenses wisdom in flat, measured tones. He is, in short, the Prozac Jesus. In contrast, the Gospels present a man who has such charisma that people will sit 3 days straight without food just to hear his riveting words. He seems excitable, impulsively moved with compassion or filled with pity. The Gospels reveal a range of Jesus' emotional responses, sudden sympathy for a person with leprosy, exuberance over his disciples' successes, a blast of anger at cold-hearted legalists, grief over an unrepentant city, and then those awful cries of anguish in Gethsemane and on the cross. He had nearly inexhaustible patience with individuals, but no patience at all with institutions and injustice. Jesus was the man for others, in Bonhoeffer's fine phrase. He kept himself free, free for the other person. He would accept almost anybody's invitation to dinner, and as a result, no public figure had a more diverse list of friends, ranging from rich people, Roman centurions and Pharisees, to tax collectors, prostitutes, and leprosy victims. People liked being with Jesus. Where he was, joy was. And yet, for all these qualities that point towards what psychologists like to call self-actualization, Jesus broke the mold. As C.S. Lewis puts it, he was not at all like the psychologist's picture of the integrated, balanced, adjusted, happily married, employed, popular citizen. You can't really be very well adjusted to your world if it says you have a devil and ends up nailing you up naked to a stake of wood. I want to talk for a minute. I've let you guys talk about your reactions, and I want to talk about some of my own reactions to this. And some of these are just sort of random. I've been taking notes on this as I've been doing this. And we can talk about it if you want in the whole 6 minutes that we have left. Jesus gravitates toward people who admit to being broken and needy. This is one of the things that really struck me in reading this. He quickly establishes intimacy. He showed, this is very interesting to me. I was raised in the church. The image I always had, if I was a good Christian and I was following the Lord, if I had it all together, sort of like what Phil Yancey said, we could just sort of cruise through our life without feeling too much. We had it together. We would miss all that topsy-turvy emotional stuff. Look at the example that Jesus gave us. He felt more. He had more stronger feelings about things. He lived a full range of human feelings, not less. What does that say to us about how we're supposed to live as Christians? Are we supposed to be playing it safe? Are we supposed to be cool when we go to church? How you doing? Fine. How are you? And both people are dying in.
Is that really where we're supposed to be? One of the things that really struck me in this is that every example we have...
Roger, I lost your mic. The battery might have gone dead.
Got it back? Every example we have, every thing we know about Jesus in the gospel accounts is relational in content. There's nothing about him being a carpenter. There's nothing about, we don't even know what he physically looked like. Every example we have of what he said and did was about his relationship with God and his relationship with other people. And what does that say to us about the emphasis that we're supposed to have on other people and relationships? He healed people. This was really interesting to me. He heals people in different ways. He always looks for the best way to reach each person. Look at that. Go back to that second or third one where he ignores the woman. He tells her to go away. He insults her. It's not a formula. This is my point. Being a follower of Jesus is not about doctrine. It's not about going to church and following the rules. It's not about not letting anybody get to know you. It's about being fully human ourselves if we want to follow the example of who Jesus was. That's one of the lessons that I'm taking from this. Sometimes he wanted to be alone. Sometimes he craved friends and crowds. He knew how to enjoy himself. That's another thing. He was accused in one of the ones we never got to. What was he accused of being? A glutton and a winebibber. Now, was that something somebody made up about him? Or did that have something to do with maybe part of the way he was? I don't want to ever say that he drank too much wine. That's not where I'm going. But I want to say he probably really enjoyed a good meal. And he enjoyed a glass of wine. And he knew how to live his life in a way that was joy-filled and happy and exuberant. He had a lot of close friends from all strata of life. When he was available to people, he was fully there. His mind wasn't distracted. He wasn't thinking about the rest of his day. He was with that person completely. How often? I can't say that about me. I know. He was the only person who was always true to himself. How often do we compromise who we are in a situation because we're feeling stressed or we want to impress somebody or we're tired or all the reasons that we cheat ourselves, that we compromise ourselves? He always went to the meat of the situation. He never allowed himself to become traumatized. Even on the cross, he's dying. And he's still talking to the two other people that are dying with him about the kingdom of heaven. So much of this was shocking and scandalous. It's good if we can still hear the Gospels this way, I think, as Jesus, as a human being. He was not afraid to be unconventional. He was less concerned with how others saw him than with speaking the truth. How much of us, how many of us can say that? He never hid behind niceties. He was wild. He was a wild guy. He was completely unpredictable. He's the only human being that ever lived that had a perfect balance between love and compassion on one side and speaking the truth on the other side. How many of us, I know there's been times in my life when I first became a Christian, it was all about the rules and following the rules, and I was very judgmental and I looked down on anybody who didn't get it. And then there was a time in my life when I swung way over the other side and I was very compassionate and I wanted to reach out to everybody and I was afraid to say a truthful word to anyone for fear of hurting them. We all tend towards one of those sides or the other. But how many of us can walk that thin middle line like Jesus did? He often picks a fight, doesn't he? There's one that we didn't get to where he actually goes to the person. He seeks them out and starts an argument with him. I want to close this with three more quotes from this. And if people have more to say after this, then that would be great. This has been a really emotional thing for me. And I'm hoping that all of you can see it sort of the way that I'm seeing Jesus. This Jesus is my Savior. This Jesus is the person that we're supposed to emulate. Not just the far away, distant, like those pictures in the past, theological God Jesus, but the human Jesus. The guy who died on a cross for my sins and got down in the dirt and the grit and was willing to be a human being. Let me give you another quote from Phil Yancey. The skeptic A.N. Wilson comments on Jesus' parable of the Pharisee and tax collector. Quote, "It is a shocking, morally anarchic story. All that matters in the story appears to be God's capacity to forgive." And he says, precisely. I really like that. The next book that I want to highly recommend, these two books are probably in my top five of all books I've ever read in my life, and I tend to read a lot. This book is called Re-Jesus, as in renew, as in not re-church or re-Bible, but re-Jesus. They're talking about bringing the person of Jesus back as being the center of our worship and what we do in the church. And the subtitle, A Wild Messiah for a Missional Church. I really like this. And there's a couple of quotes in here that I want to read. As Robert McAfee Brown once said about the meaning of life, it is our task, quote, to create foretastes of the kingdom of God on this planet. Living glimpses of what life is meant to be, which include art and music and poetry and shared laughter and picnics and politics and moral outrage and special privileges for children only and wonder and humor and endless love. And then the last one. Our point is that to re-Jesus the church, we need to go back to the daring, radical, strange, wonderful, inexplicable, unstoppable, marvelous, unsettling, disturbing, caring, powerful God-man. The communities around us are crying out for him. They're turning up in droves to hear the Dalai Lama speak. They're buying mountains of books on popular theology. They're traipsing over sacred sites across the globe. They're searching for the promised one, the one who offers them restoration and peace. The church needs to find itself in league with this Jesus, staring at him in amazement and saying, as Peter did with a trembling voice, "What kind of man is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Even the wild demons obey him. Even the Pharisees quake at the thought of what he might unleash if left to his own devices." Thank you.